We're going to remember music critic Robert Palmer, who died yesterday at the age of 52. He had liver disease and had been awaiting a liver transplant. Palmer was the New York Times' first full-time pop music critic. He was at the Times from 1981 to 88. Palmer was also the author of books about Jerry Lee Lewis, the Blues, the Rolling Stones, and the songwriting team of Lieber and Stoller. As his fellow music critic John Pareles wrote in the Times obituary today, Palmer mixed vivid musical insight with broader cultural and historical connections. He celebrated music for its rule-breaking spirit, far-flung roots, stubborn characters, and untamed noise. Robert Palmer was chief advisor to the PBS series Rock and Roll: An Unruly History and wrote the companion book. I spoke with him in 1995 about his first encounter with rock and roll.
I think everybody has their own rock and roll history, you know, that starts with the first music that they heard, and it develops not always in a linear progression, but sometimes going back into history as well as forward, you know. I mean, a lot of people come in at the point of listening to some contemporary artist and then sort of gradually get into discovering the roots, you know, possibly starting with the influences of the person that they first got turned on to. I think everybody has that magic moment when the music rocked them for the first time.
And what was yours?
Mine would probably be the first Coasters hit record, Searchin' and Youngblood. I remember that coming on when I was about 11 or 12 years old. I had been hearing pre-rock and roll popular music on the radio for a few years prior to that, and I was very interested in music, but I didn't, you know, I wasn't that crazy about what was passing for pop music at the time. And then when I heard Searchin' by the Coasters, and a little after that I heard Ray Charles, and that was the music that really turned me around.
What spoke to you about it?
It's really hard to say. I think it was really the quality of the voices. It was the fact that these black singers, there was all these grit in their voices, and these kind of sounds like they were maybe ripping their vocal cords a little bit when they were singing. And it seemed to convey so much emotion and energy and excitement, you know, just the sound of the voices and the texture of the voices. And the way that the voices blended together had a kind of harmony that was not conventional harmony. It was something else. And it was, after having heard very conventional harmony, you know, all my life, having never heard blues or even any really down-home country and western music, but just kind of having heard that 50s white bread pop, the first time I heard black voices and black rhythms, I was just floored, and I probably never got over it.
Why don't we play the Coasters?
Okay, great. Gonna find her.
Palmer, you grew up in Arkansas, and near Little Rock, is that?
In Little Rock,
Little Rock,
yeah.
Okay. And when you were coming of age, it was still segregated, I guess.
Very much so. I personally integrated in reverse all the black rhythm and blues shows that came to the auditorium in Little Rock starting when I was 15 years old, and that was in 1960. There were no integrated shows in Arkansas, and I was the first white kid to start showing up at all the black shows, and it was such a novelty that nobody thought to stop me, even though I was only 15 years old and I was going in these places where people were drinking and pulling knives and all sorts of things, you know. But I was able to go in and hear people like Sam Cooke and, you know, Otis Redding, Solomon Burke, all these great, great people. And that really was what got me started in the music, was going to those shows. I really rarely missed one. And, you know, by the time I was college age, there were, several more local white kids going to the shows. But there was only me to begin with. And then when I was in college, I was the only white musician in an otherwise all-black band that played around in almost entirely in black joints. So I had a real sort of involvement in black music and black culture that I really think it was possible because I grew up in Arkansas at that particular time. And all of those developments, I was, right on the cutting edge. I've been around long enough that I was able to be first with all that kind of stuff in town. And consequently, I didn't really ever have much trouble, getting into those shows. It was several years later that I first started going to white rock shows, probably about 1965, before I ever went to a Dick Clark Caravan of Stars, and that was to see the Yardbirds.
No, I grew up in Brooklyn and used to go to see the Murray the K rock and roll shows. Murray the K was a great New York disc jockey. And there'd be a mix of acts, or black acts and white acts sharing the same bill, and lots of black teenagers and white kids in the audience. And I guess there was nothing like that when you were growing up in
Arkansas.
Well,
that was the great promise of rock and roll, that it was supposed to be like that, And I think that it was small independent labels that were putting out most of the music in the 50s. And, as soon as the sort of major corporate labels could reassert control, it went back to being segregated shows again. I mean, the shows that I saw in Little Rock were shows that were all black acts and were for black people only. And yet, if I had been going to those shows in the mid-50s and seeing a lot of the same artists, and it had been Brooklyn, that would have been billed as a rock and roll show. But below the Mason-Dixon line, it was rhythm and blues and strictly for black people.
Music critic Robert Palmer recorded in 1995. He died yesterday of liver disease at the age of 52. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our engineer is Audrey Bentham. Dorothy Farabee is our administrative assistant. Katie Balser is our intern. Alan Tu directed the show. I'm Terry Gross.
It brings a tear into my eyes.
Support for Fresh Air comes from the listeners of WHYY in Philadelphia, where Fresh Air is produced, and from Remy Martin, Cognac, France, since 1724. Information available, 800-678-REMY. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
On the next Fresh Air, as you plan your Thanksgiving dinner, we'll get advice from two cooks, Madeline Kamen, who has just updated her 1971 book, The Making of a Cook, and Shirley Carrier, an expert on the chemistry of cooking. I'm Terry Gross. Join us for the next Fresh Air.